Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Wheel Reads, a Wheel of Time podcast. Your hosts are Alan, Chris, and Ian. This podcast is safe for first-time readers with no spoilers. This week, we'll be covering chapters 46 and 47 of The Fires of Heaven, Other Battles, Other Weapons, and The Price of a Ship. Enjoy! Welcome to season 5, episode 20. So I do want to give a quick shout out. We do have one new patron. So Troy, thank you very much. Patron Troy. Yay. New patron. Yay. Troy,
All right. Don't let Helen on our patron, because then this whole thing will fucking fall apart.
True. And then, as far as other things I want to talk about, I guess I like to share little statistics or whatever. So one thing I haven't talked about a lot, at least I talk about the end episode. I know everyone just doesn't listen to that thing. Well, some do, but most people don't. They like, oh, the episode's over. Not going to listen to the final announcement. So Discord, we do have a large Discord community. I think actually as of checking before I started this, when I was writing the notes today, was 672 people in our Discord server. So
nice.
Now some of those are alt accounts and a few bots. So, but still 672.
Hey, that's awesome.
Yeah. I know at least of three bots in there. there's Fredboat, there's a Patreon bot, and there's the ME6 or whatever, the welcome bot. So there might be more. Oh, and there's another bot too. That's spoiler. Yeah. Thank you guys. Everybody's like, oh yeah, that one. So there is another bot. That's pretty much it. Join the Discord. It's where we do live stuff for now. That will be changing eventually. But for now, we're still recording live on Discord. Probably still will, but we'll have other options as well besides Discord in the future. Down the line.
Teaser.
Yeah. Well, it's once Ian's finally done being in
unpredictable
internet situation. Right.
It's been decent lately, but who knows, that could change.
Yeah, that could change in a heartbeat. So
one budget cut.
They're like, well, do we really need that North Carolina place to have internet?
Nah. We're sending you out to Alaska. What's in Alaska? You are. And that's it.
No, what part of Alaska? That's a great thing. No one lives there. You can name it. Wait, what? Wait. I don't like this.
We didn't ask you what you like.
Yeah, my uncle got stationed on one of those Aleutian Island ones that's like literally like five guys on a post. And it was during the Cold War. So like they were just basically a listening post out towards Russia.
They're shouting across the Bering Sea. What's your name? Ezekiel. Fuck you, Ezekiel. Nukes get launched.
I think that's how the whole meme started. Was
exactly.
Just
from, was your Russia. Relatives in the Cold War. And,
exactly. So as far as personal life goes, we just got back from JordanCon. So that's pretty much it for personal life. Lots of good memories were made. Was a lot of fun. A whirlwind of a weekend. Didn't know what to expect going into it, and it was wonderful. Just got to meet a whole lot of people that I've talked to on the internet, a whole lot of people I've never talked to before, and everything in between. Went to a sprinkle of panels. Most of my time was spent in the lobby or just wandering around and to back in the room to fill drinks.
Lots of drinks.
lots of drinks. Someone actually commented. I think I overheard someone saying that this was the most alcohol heavy JordanCon they've ever been to. So
success.
Sorry if we brought that. Sorry, yeah. Not sorry. But yeah, so a lot of good stories. I'm sure we'll get into them over time. Stories were made, but you know, I guess if we want to, we can share like our favorite moments, or at least we'll pick one. And I'll start with one just because I'm putting you guys on the spot. Just give you time to think. So there was an incident that happened Saturday night, very, very late, I guess early Sunday morning, involving furry animals. And that's not my favorite part though. So that was fun. But the next day I was outside and I ran into Maria Simmons, who was the personal assistant of Robert Jordan. And I got to talking to her and I was like, yeah, it was crazy last night. She's like, yeah, what happened? I was like, well, there was this possum. She's like, oh, the possum came back in the hotel. I was like, wait, this happens like without missing a beat. And she was just joking with me, but like without missing a beat, she's like, oh, the possum was back. Cool. Like, what? Wait, what?
So it's a regular occurrence then.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was pretty cool talking to her for a bit. I had actually a decently long conversation and even a longer conversation with Robert Jordan's niece that night as well, which was really cool. Just talking to her because she grew up with Robert Jordan.
Oh, that's dope.
And got to talk to her for a while, which was really cool. I think actually Vance from Bar of the Red Hand was with me when we were talking. So cool. Anyway, how about you guys?
Yeah. So for the personal life, I'll definitely stick to the JordanCon theme. I don't have anything else exciting going on in my life at the moment. I would say the coolest part is this is like my first go round with doing online friends. Anytime I did some gaming in the past or the old instant messenger days, like I never talked to strangers. It was like friends that I knew in real life. So there was a little bit of like anxiety about like, you know, meeting folks for real. Would it be weird? Like, you know, what do you do with all the downtime sort of thing? But gosh, I talked to a couple people, like how crazy it was. Everybody just kind of linked up. And once we matched faces to names, for those that don't Zoom that often and everything, it was like a bunch of old friends hanging out. It was so casual and relaxed. I mean, to the point where like in between events and stuff, we would just kind of be chilling in each other's rooms. And it wasn't like this forced, awkward situation. It was just kind of chillaxing and shooting the breeze. And it was just a wonderful feeling. Mm-hmm. Really didn't expect that. I thought maybe I'd click with one or two folks, but everybody was just fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, to the point where you guys are close swapping and, you know, and cuddling late night with Dean, you know, just lots of good stuff.
Right. Yeah. Lots of good photos of the cuddling. Yeah. So, and then I guess it was Saturday night, the beginning of the possum story. You know, I was just looking for something a little more comfortable to wear. I didn't enjoy the formal wear that I had with me. You know, I didn't have the right belt, so it just felt funny. Yeah. So somebody in our patron group offered an alternate set of clothes for me, and I tried them on. It was super comfy. And yeah, then a possum pooped on it and had to do a costume change.
I might have scared the possum into the hotel, maybe on purpose.
Yeah, it was. And the timing was perfect. So there was Alan and a group of folks outside of the hotel. And I guess they saw the possum and they were like, oh, we need to corral him away from the front door. But all it did was kind of scare it into the front door. And it was a baby possum, so it was able to fit under the front door. And I was just coming back from wherever the panels were, doing something over there. And I didn't even know Al and them were out there. And I'm walking by and I look down and I'm like, what the fuck? Is that a rat? It's just moving so fast. So of course I'm chasing or whatever. And everybody's like, possum, oh, but it was super cute. Caught it with a cowboy hat, also loaned to me by another patron. Interesting experience. Uh-huh. I also love how half the people like scream bloody murder. Like, oh my God, this cute little things that could kill me. And then the other half are like, well, clearly we have to catch it, name it, and make it our pet.
We couldn't find a badger. So it was the next best thing. We did threaten several times in this podcast to release a badger in JordanCon. And this was probably literally the next best thing we could have done. So
true.
Yeah. My favorite game after that though is everybody I ran into that didn't see it go down, I would point to the poop on my dress and give them three guesses. If they could figure out what it was, offer them $500, and nobody guessed possum poop. Like nobody went there.
Yeah. I actually, one of the Black Tower guys came out to the next day. It's like, yeah, he came outside. He was like, guess what's on my dress? Like, ketchup. Nope. Barbecue sauce. Nope. I throw up. I don't. Nope. Possum pit. Bullshit.
Yep. There were witnesses. Go ask. It was a good time. It's those unexpected moments. I mean, the planned panels you could go to, that's all cool and fun. It's the craziness that happens with too much alcohol and feral animals. That's where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
You say the panels are fun, but when you walk in and literally 3 minutes later, you're kicked out with the quickness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Spoiler. Yeah. Run away.
I think we are determined, we being myself and Chanel, that when we go next year, we will definitely get a room and we're going to make it first time reader room.
Yeah, that's the safe space.
Yeah, and we'll call it the safe space. So
like the non-Watt panels, of course, were not spoilery. Like Eden and I went to an Expanse panel that was pretty good, but it had nothing to do with it was about Expanse and Dune. It's a sci-fi panel. It was cool.
We did some of those things too. Like we meandered, which was the best thing. Of course, I bought a bunch of stuff I had no business buying, but I'm supporting the local authors. Like when you find a book that's $7 and it looks like it has some promise, what do you do? But
yeah, roll the dice, go for it.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right. And then when you find a book that's literally supporting giraffes, it's like, I don't think I like giraffes. Why not? That's
cool. Yeah.
You have a guy who's got a doctoral degree in U.S. history and he's written like science fiction novels in history. Like, that's super cool. I'm like, you should know your stuff because you have a doctoral degree. So I'm going to trust you to write a good book. So I came home with a stack of books that 2, 4, 6 books, all signed, personalized messages. Pretty cool. Supporting, you know, the small guys that are trying to make their way. And then I don't know if you guys saw it, but when I was in with the vendors, I walked past a silversmith who had a medallion, a silver medallion with a wolf on it. And I'm like, dude, what percentage of silver is that? He's like, no, that's pure silver. I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, no, seriously, it's pure silver. I'm like, dope. And then right around the corner was a woman making bookmarks with like charms. And one of those charms had a hammer on it.
Nice.
So I bought the silver medallion.
It had your name written all over it, man.
It did. I took it over to the woman with the hammer medallion and had her clip the silver medallion on one end with the hammer on the other end. So now I have my own pairing bookmark.
Oh, that's nice. Very cool.
Like, it's super dope. Like, I sent the picture in the group. Like, it's really neat. I love it. Like, that was the highlight of my trip, but that was a highlight. The highlight was getting to meet everybody that we see online in person. Like, it's one thing to hear the voices and to interact online. It's another thing to like get a hug from people like Delusions or Tree. It's like, these are real people. Like, well, I know that sounds stupid, but it's like they're here, they're in person, and you get to meet all of the others, and I won't name names because, you know, some of them are part of secret societies and such that we can't talk about, but to meet all of the cool people and just to interact and to be in that space and to get to see people playing the game, because you know there was a lot of that going on with the, you know, people that felt like they were celeb versus those of us who are just normal average Joes. And then us being made to feel like we were a celebrity, that was kind of crazy too. Like, yeah, I appreciate
it. There was a little taste of that.
A little bit of it. I was not ready for that.
No, it was really weird to walk in and see somebody wearing our shirt. Like, I expected us to be wearing our shirt at some point, but to walk in and just see a random person wearing our floaty shirt, it was like somebody actually bought our shirt.
Well, they could have won it as a prize.
They could have won
still,
it. Too, yeah,
the fact that they're wearing it, very cool. Yeah. Also, like that 99.9% of all of the people there were huggers. And I'm a hugger. Yeah. And now consent's still important, right? You don't just go around hugging everybody, but I essentially got to hug everybody.
Nobody asked me. There was just arms wide. I guess the arms wide open before the grab.
Right. You do the pause, like, and they're like, yeah, bring it in. Yeah. That's kind of how I was.
Yeah. And next year we will become more prepared. prepared and bring lots of ribbons. So we didn't have ribbons this year because I mean, I heard about the ribbon thing, but I didn't know how.
Yeah, we didn't know.
I didn't know how big the ribbon thing was, but that's a big thing. It's a big thing.
There were kids there that were like ribboned up. Like y'all did not get stoned. If you did, your parents should have a better eye on you.
Yeah,
it could be medical. You know,
it could be. Yeah.
Hey, so, I will tell you, I used some stuff and it cured back pains and stuff that I've been sorting through for months. And I was just like, oh, everything's gone. Like, at first, I was a little frustrated because I had to drive home. I was like, I can't focus to drive home because I just, my paranoia is I didn't realize what it felt like to have that hyper focus. Mm-hmm. And literally everything stood out to me. And I like would move focuses so much, shift focus. We made it where we needed to go.
There you go.
I woke up that next morning and I'm like, where's my back pain?
It's gone.
Like I was waiting for my friend left to it at pop the hotel. Up. And I was like, damn, it's gone. And then, you know, when we got home, it was still gone. So I tried some new acrobatic moves in the bedroom and it was phenomenal too. Probably TMI, but welcome to the channel.
Yeah. Yeah. I know of at least three ribbons I'm going to do next year. So, but we might do more, but,
yeah. I've got plans now. We were feeling it out this year. Now that I know it's like,
I'm going to do a sure one where it's just a sure. I mean, it has a logo on it. Sure. Yeah. And then I'm going to do one that says, easing the possum.
I forget the badge.
And then I'm also going to do a Team Pater one, but that one I'm not going to hand out. I'm just going to hide it all, like hide ribbons randomly all over the con for people to find.
Be perfect.
So that's going to be a Team Pater, since we have the Team Pater merch. So, yeah, sounds cool. So,
oh, wait, no, I have one more thing.
Oh, so, you have one more?
Alan has a plan for us to actually do media stuff because we got media badges. So we're like, we got to do some media stuff so we can hopefully get media badges next year, right?
We're totally not getting a media badge next year.
No. So Alan hands me the GoPro, mics me up, turns the GoPro on. I mean, the little light's on, so I'm assuming it's on. And we go to one panel, and I'm walking around getting different angles, and I'm showing the screen and the panel, and then the crowd's reaction. And I thought I did a really great job. And I get back to the room, and Alan's fiddling with it and sticks it in there, and he goes to pull up the file. That motherfucking GoPro was not even recording. And that was like the longest panel I was at. It was over an hour. And I was like, you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. It's up to you, Alan.
Well, then on the voice recorder, I brought the wrong type of battery. So I couldn't, that went dead. So then I couldn't even replace that. So I was like, you know what? So we're just going to take pictures of the phones and hopefully I can put something together. So yeah.
Yeah. Alan forgot to hit record. Imagine that.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise. Surprise. What, reads without technical difficulties? This, you guys giving me the passes and expect me to actually do something and not have complete disaster? Come on, guys.
I'm supposed to glitched out video that you can't hear or see. And then, you know, hashtag JordCon 2022.
I'll just put a bunch of wingdings in a Word document. Like, yeah, this is it. anyway. So
it was great.
It was fun. So next, you guys ready?
Yeah. Next
chapter.
All right.
We have.
All right. Yeah. We could just talk about JordCon all night. I mean, we could do a whole bonus episode.
You all made it. I don't know who all is listening and who will listen, but we really had a good time. Chanel, she came out of her shell at that. I mean, for those that do not know, who have not listened enough, Chanel is a huge introvert.
Mm-hmm.
She carried on more conversations at JordanCon than I did, which is hard to fathom because I talk a lot. Mm-hmm. But you know, she had Allie. She had some really great conversations with Allie. Allie will be invited to our first time only room.
Yep.
Like
she's a ball of energy.
Yeah, good conversations with Tree and Delusions. And you know, it's funny because she doesn't listen to the channel because she hasn't caught up to us, but she was like, I feel like I know these people and I feel like they know me and it's super weird. And like, yeah, welcome. Well,
they've been listening to you about her since you guys started dating. So
sorry guys.
It's all good.
No, it's very cool.
It's all good. All right. So let's jump right in. Chapter 46. Other battles, other weapons.
Mm. Is it bad? I want to go back to the match chapter. I was like, 46 is good, but
rad.
God, it's a hearts and minds thing. It's getting into the politics of it.
Yeah.
The fighting's over, but the fighting's just begun.
So, yeah. So it starts with Rand. You know, he's
fighting with Avienda still.
Fighting with Avienda. Yeah, he's weak. But still insists on going to the conquered Kyrian because that's what he's supposed to do. And Avienda tries to persuade him to stay and rest. And they get to a little tidbit about it as he's trying to put his clothes back on. And she's just sitting there watching
No.
Oh, no, this different part?
He's not trying to put his clothes back on. He's trying to find his clothes.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, the dragon reborn, the Karkarn, can leave the tent if he can manage to find his clothes and go. And so he literally like tramples around looking through his stuff and he like grabs his sword and she's like, you don't need that anymore. Like, you've already, like, this is when he learns that Culloden is dead.
Yes.
I didn't want to skip over that because in his mind, he still had things left to do.
Mm-hmm.
He still doesn't know who killed Culloden, which I can't wait for that moment to come up.
There was a blip of it. Didn't they say something to him at the end of the last chapter?
They did, but
it was so quick. And he was in his whirlwind. Like, he was. You could tell it. He didn't really grasp onto it. He didn't. Oh, wait, what? But like, then the conversation just kept going. So
he was more in his Luz Theron mind state than he was in his Rand Al'Thor mind state.
Agreed. I think this is the first time he's like, oh, wait a minute.
He totally slipped out of character and into a whole nother train of thought at this point. And he was battle enraged, caught by the power, and quote unquote mad.
Yeah. So that's where I was going to go with that. So it's good you brought it up. Like, it seemed like this was the first time he was getting it. But to your point, because he was freaking out of his mind, still Luz Theron in it, coming back from the power high, all that jazz with the little blip he got before.
Yeah, so then we got Avienda just chilling, drinking her drink, sippy sip, sippy sip, and his clothes are under her bosom. I mean, under her booty. I mean, either way, he gets to move it.
I like the little kind of interaction there where, you know, he's trying to like convince Avienda, like, you should be watching me anyway. That would be disgraceful, Lane. She's like, that's not a thing. I can watch if I want to. Like,
that was hilarious. Like, you know, she may own you, but she doesn't own your image.
Yeah.
He's like, you don't know anything about Wetlanders. I can't wait till you tell her that. I can't wait till you tell her that we had some fun. I can't wait for that conversation because that's going to be an interesting one. I know this is not the chapter, but it just kind of came to my mind in that moment when she's talking about watching him, like, how happy does she think that, you know, her friend is going to be that she literally sexed her man? No other way of putting it. Laid it down. And this is probably Rand's first.
It was, I think. It was Rand's first.
So, as far as we know, yeah.
I mean, how's Elaine going to stack up to that?
Yeah. Do you guys have theories?
I mean,
do you think it's gonna be a cat fight? I think
he's gonna be disappointed.
Between
the two of them? Yeah. Do I think it's gonna be cat fight? I think Elaine is too much of a lady to fight over it. I honestly think that they're gonna share him. Like, I think there's gonna be like some fealty pledged to some Elaine,
sister wife type thing.
Sister wife in it, yeah.
I mean, if Elaine becomes green and has multiple warders, one of them's already female.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, she's got to be down with that, you know?
Yeah.
Huh. Although I'm thinking she might like stumble into being a brown or something like that. Like, that would be funny.
So Rand does find his clothes underneath Avienda. And, you know, he actually, gets his clothes. He's like, funny. Okay. Give my clothes.
He got me.
Yeah, he got me. And Rand rides out to Kyrian, accompanied by Avienda, which was hilarious when he was mounting
and Asmodian, right?
And Asmodian, yeah.
Gotta put that in there. Asmodian has come up in the world. Asmodian's growing on me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not gonna say a favorite character, but he's not as disliked as he once was.
You're not alone in the fandom.
I think he's making that turn. I think he's realizing what's going on. He's like, all right, I could be down with this. Yeah. And he's slowly shedding the look of the Gleeman. I mean, it said he still had his harp or whatever, but he didn't have the Gleeman cloak. Mm-hmm. Like, how soon until he's just a companion of Rand's and no longer this Gleeman?
Yeah.
I don't know if companion will ever be a word to describe Asmodian, but confidant, acquaintance, you know, I do see him getting a seat. He's definitely positioning himself, because you're right. He is realizing very quickly that he needs to do so. So I will give you that. But Rand, and this is nothing against Asmodian, Rand no longer trusts anybody except for the women in his life. He literally states that in this chapter. He's like,
actually, he states that he only trusts himself.
You're right. He only trusts himself, but he appreciates
the
women for putting him in his place. And for an individual to allow somebody to put him in their place, there's a level of trust there.
Correct. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. And he takes notice of how many Shido prisoners that have become Gaishan. And he worries about their loyalty at the Geatel. You know, the fact that they're not really guarded at that point because it's the Shido. And he doesn't trust the Shido at all. And he also sees a lot of people that are supposed to be Gaishan, you know, wearing scarlet headbands. Was it Swishwai Aman? And he actually asked what that means. And before he even answered, he's like, I already know what this means.
I mean, so 20,000 Gaishan, all there, you know, stripped down to nothing, waiting for orders. As the conquering person, I would be a little freaked out too. That is 20,000 people. I need to figure out what I'm going to do with them. Like, I'm sending them back to the waste.
Yeah.
I would scatter them, you know, across.
But then you'd have Tell. But then he'd have Tell. Like, that's not how Gia Tell works.
Maybe he's in defeat and he likes Tell.
No, maybe.
Maybe he's got a fetish.
Maybe he likes that Tell.
But I mean, he could give them a command. He can give them something to do and send them on their way. Right.
I think so. In a normal situation, yeah, there'd be a lot of distrust there. But just, I don't know. The vibe I get from the Aiel is that a vast majority of them would, because of their beliefs, you know, actually serve. I was more stuck on when Rand was contemplating how, like, was he talking about the Aiel as a whole or just these folks that were essentially slaves to him?
Just these folks that are essentially slaves to him.
Right. And that would be very weird. Like,
that they'd all pledged pretty much wearing that headband.
Yeah,
which was weird.
That is odd. I don't know. That wouldn't sit very well with me.
Yeah. Now, if you just conquer to people and then all of a sudden, like, they're all pledged to you, like, it's like, I don't trust any of you.
Well, no, that was everybody. That wasn't just
It wasn't just the Shido. Yeah, it was other ones.
The Shido had nothing on. That was everybody.
Okay, else. Yeah, it was everyone else. Yeah, but still, people that are definitely indentured or whatever. Still, it's a little strange.
Yeah,
but I think it comes down to their prophecies. I mean, they are now considering themselves the spear of the dragon, or the tip of the spear of the dragon.
Yeah, the spear of the dragon, I think.
I mean, at the end of the day, they're just recognizing their place. Like, they are there to ensure that the prophecies are fulfilled. Beyond that, there's not much to it.
So I got a comment on one comment I just got in the chat, which I'm gonna disagree slightly. David Russell just said it's always awkward when you accidentally start a cult, and as someone who actually did this in high school, it's not. the DDC still lives on.
That was really to throw off the teachers, parents, then people kind of outside of our social.
It started with Patrick's mom, because. I can't remember what we were doing. We were doing something, and his mom started like interrogating us, like, where are you going? What are you doing? And like, we're going to a meeting. What's the meeting? DDC. What does DDC stand for? Dead Deer Cult. Don't worry about it. Bye.
We've already said too much. Yeah.
We've already said too much.
That was like the thing. If people were asking what we were up to, we're like, it's DDC business. DDC, can't talk about it.
DDC business. It really was nothing but just nothing.
Yeah. Folks were convinced something was going on.
Yeah. Like, what's all this DDC stuff? I don't know. Like, we have no rules and really nothing that we know anything about besides a name.
Someone from the FBI is listening and just crossed it off his list and goes, well, that one was fake.
We got him. Send him in.
Yep. Blue team, go.
Anyway. So they finally do get to Carrion, and the first thing Rand notices is the Foregate's been burned down to ashes. There's nothing left of it. There's vultures and you know, birds flying above, ravens and vultures, and just from all the death. He's just kind of, you know, he's greeted by the sight of death. But as soon as he walks through the gates, it's a completely different story. So outside the town or the city, it's just death everywhere and very obvious. And then as soon as he walks inside, just cheering crowds.
Yeah.
Probably be a little jarring. Before we
go that far, I don't want to I want to go back. It's been a while since I've done this, but I think one of my favorite quotes is here. It's Asmodian says it. He's chuckling. He says, "It is difficult to see the difference between oneself and one's enemy. They want to own the world, but it seems you already own a people." And that made Rand feel very uncomfortable. I mean, the
but truth isn't that is better?
The truth.
There's so the people that want land for the sake of land and property for the sake of property, like to show that they're powerful, versus someone that is just naturally, or well, I guess unnaturally in Rand's case, like a leader, and people want to follow him. I'd rather have the people than the things and the stuff, you know.
True, but I guess it was in the meaning of the word Shishwa Aman, which, based on Luz Theron's memories and what they understood, is it implies ownership.
Well, yeah, and that's the so part like that
they
I wasn't
will
a huge
literally fan. Do whatever he says for them to do. It's not a democratic thing; it's a monarchy at this point. So, yeah. I'm interested to see how he turns that. And this is where the destruction of the Aiel world is going to come into place in their ways. I don't think it's going to be a physical destruction. He's just going to break down their understanding of life so much that they're not going to be themselves anymore.
Yeah. The old ways are out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So riding in, like he said, he's cheered on by a ton of people. And again, here's a situation where he's won the people, but he doesn't own them. He is there as their savior, which honestly can be a scarier thought, because yeah. Now he's like the pinnacle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, and everyone's trying to, you know, touch the horses, and it even mentions that people are touching Asmodian, thinking that he might be the dragon. Like, I mean, no one even knows who is actually the dragon. They're all just trying to, you know, get close and you know, and they're super excited.
It's important to differentiate. You're saying everyone. Remember when he first comes in, it's the nobodies that recognize him first, because he didn't come announced.
Right.
There wasn't this grand parade that, you know, the high lords and the whatever politicians that Carrion
would
have wanted. How many
maidens of the spear went with him?
Yeah, it was. Well, no, so it was a parade in that sense. He was parading in, but it wasn't a welcoming parade like right. The Carrionians wanted. It was the beggars, the street people, the lowlifes that, you know, right. And
the actual people.
Yeah. And so they were just like super welcoming and fawning over him and touching Asmodian, touching everybody they possibly could. Mm-hmm. In contrast to when they finally run into what's his face. I don't even care to remember his name. Hopefully it falls off of something.
Yeah.
But anyways, and he was like, oh, had we known, you know, we would have had a parade and a welcoming, like befitting somebody of your stature sort of thing. And Rand's like, oh no, I had that. They were very welcoming. Yeah, this is great. And
this is great.
It just confused the guy, like, yeah, okay, whatever.
He's like, we would have kicked all the riffraff out and had only noble people greet you. And it's like, oh, yeah. No, I want the people. Like, no, screw you.
Yep. Yeah. So, yes, everyone was excited, but in different phases and different people at different times. Sort of
right.
Thing.
Yep. And then they make their way to the palace, the Sun Palace. Yeah, and Rand gets to the palace, and he is greeted by the remaining Tyrian high lords. You know, and they get angry then for Milian going and greeting Rand without them. You know, it's all a bunch of nobles getting upset about, you know, whose dick's bigger kind of thing.
Pretty much.
Play a little.
How have they not heard anything about Rand at all? Like, how has there been no intel about what he did in Tyr? Like, shouldn't they know what's coming?
Yeah.
Like, does Rand really need to walk in there and be like, by the way, everything's changing.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be too comfortable in your seat.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'd be surprised if Rand just leaves things the way they are, you know?
Right.
I've got ideas about his plan for the throne.
Right. And he puts them off balance, like I said, by smiling warmly to them, you know, and just being like, okay, cool. I'm fine.
Great.
And this is fun.
I like the fact that he, first off, admits the fact that he's become really comfortable with having Moraine around and the advice that she gives him, because he recognizes that there is some value to the lessons that he's been learning. Mm-hmm. And that is what he used to kind of throw them off. He's actually playing the game now. He was so adverse to playing along, and now he's realized the benefit and taking advantage of those moments. He's like, you know what? If I've got to play, I'm going to play it my way, and I'm going to turn these people on themselves. I'm going to turn them on their heads. I'm going to make them think. I'm going to make them wonder. He's like, for every one thought I have, they're having 20,000 thoughts. Like, everything's racing through their mind at one time. One grin, one head nod, one handshake sends them spiraling into assumptions. He said, that's where I want them to be. I want them to be uncomfortable at all time, because that's going to stop them from lashing out at me.
For now. Temporarily. This dazed Amar shit's so ingrained in him. Like, if he's not careful, he's going to get outplayed. I actually think it would have been better to come in with a huge power play right off the bat. He's got these huge armies with him and behind him. He just had this huge demonstration of power and how they won the battle. Now would be the time to just come in and straight up tell him, be like, your reign is over. This is who I'm putting in charge. I don't want to hear shit out of you. By the way, half of your shit, you know, while you're sitting up here comfortable while the battle was being fought and everybody down there was dying and the whole Fort Gate got destroyed. Yeah, we're taking all of your shit and we're using it to rebuild for the people, sort of thing. Yeah. Like, if that's the route he's going to go, and I'm not saying it is, it'd be cool if he did. But
not cool if he did.
I think the power play right up front might have been better. And have a plan and have people that are loyal to you on your side to be looking with eyes and ears for the people that are going to try and buck and nip that really quick, you know?
Yep. And next he's led into the Grand Hall of the Sun, where the Sun Throne, again, Grand Hall of the Sun, where the Sun Throne is.
Yeah, like, have a seat.
And he immediately refuses it. He's like,
that shit looks uncomfortable.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I mean, there's your first big power move though.
Yeah.
Yep.
He sees the throne and is like, bring me a chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got a lazy boy, something that reclines.
Exactly. He's like, bruh, just bring me a chair with some cushions on it. I mean, that in and of itself kind of shows his stance. He's for the people. He's not trying to be their king. He's just there to lead them into the right path.
Yeah, and that puts a hush around the entire crowd, though, of noblemen. They're like, what?
Yeah.
But it might even be more than that. Like, you know, eventually, yes, somebody's going to sit on the throne, but it's not like he's going to sit there and stay there, right? And the message that maybe he's trying to give is, I'm above that. This is just a step along my path. You know, whoever sits in this throne, that's great. I'm going to pick them, but they're going to serve me.
Well, and think about it. It's the Tyrians that came from the tier, right? I don't even need that
throne.
Yeah, the Tyrians had come to save. So they raised their flags all over Kyrian.
Like, but they came from the tier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's established his kingdom pretty much there. So he's made two great statements. First off, he did make the statement, like Ian said, like, I'm not going to take this throne. This throne is mine, but I'm going to put the person in place that's going to be here. Might even return it back to the royalty that was here, because he does make that play when he's like, why did the Kyrians hang back? He said, though the Tyrians came here to help, there's no reason for the Kyrians to hold themselves in the rear. Let everyone sort themselves by rank, everyone. So he put them now on equal status.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a reminder to the people from Tyr, like, I own you. You will follow me, and I will go back and claim that seat if need be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's got a greater kingdom.
Hey, right, a greater kingdom. Getting them to start to think not just Tyr and Kyrian, like, you guys are now people of the dragon.
Like, and then on top of that, to kind of back that up, when he went up to claim the seat and not the throne, he didn't allow anybody with him but the maidens.
Right.
Yeah, just a powerful visual, just in case you all were wondering
gigantic
what the actual pecking order is. You guys think you're the shit, and you're all lined up by rank over there.
Yeah.
These people are with me.
Yeah. And I mean, he does allow the Kyrian nobility to come sit in the rightful place. Then I mean, the next war is a big one too. I mean, he orders that all the Tyrian flags that fly by the city, you know, they can stay. He said, that's fine. But I've seen just about as equal amount of dragon banners. Take all of them down except for one, and then give those back to the Kyrian banners.
Yeah, he's like, leave the biggest, baddest motherfucker up as high as you can, because we are all under one banner, and it is mine. You can fly all yours that you want to, but you will obey.
Yeah, it's kind of like, was it in the movie 300, where the Persian king, what's his name, or God, he considered himself?
Xerxes.
When he's like making the offer to him, he's like, oh, you know, you're a great general. That's fine. Yeah, you could still be general, you could still be Sparta.
He's like, I'll let you keep your land.
You could still be you. Everything, all you gotta do
is bend over.
Take a knee. So continue to do your thing. He's not trying to, like, he's assimilating, but not trying to like make him change too much. He's like,
yeah,
you be you.
And that worked very well for you to serve me. It worked very well in a lot of places for them. They conquered a lot because of that exact same. They assimilated. They took on the parts of the people that they thought were important. They put in their own stuff and they moved on. They also like married in and created a bunch of babies. That way,
yeah,
they didn't have to worry about it.
Somewhat different, but kind of similar. I mean, the Persians that worked for them, I mean, it's been used commonly in history. Genghis Khan, that's one of the reasons why he was able to conquer the Mongols, where he conquered so much. Is because when they would show up to a new town or city that had a wall behind it, they had a system and everybody knew about this, and they'd raise a flag, and I can't remember what colors they wore. It was like a green flag. I'm just making this up now, but it was a green flag. They'd fly up, and that means if you surrender now, everything just keeps on the same. You just are under Mongol control and everything's hunky dory. Everything's fine. They'd get 24 hours for you to open the gates up. If you didn't, they're like, all right. So the next day they'd raise, let's say, the yellow flag. I mean, just stoplight colors. It was different colors. But, and they said, okay, well, now since you refused that offer, if you open now, only the men of fighting age will be slaughtered and your women, children will be fine. And if they didn't open the gates, then the third day they rose the red flag, which meant, or black flag, which meant
everything. Everything's going down.
Everybody's going to die. And if you don't open the gate, and now we're coming in, I don't care. So,
yeah.
And they would go slaughter every woman, child, and man inside the whole entire village or town. That war spread throughout all the lands. And as Genghis Khan's army would show up, they'd usually just open the gates the first day. Yeah, we're good.
Hey, guys.
It's like, wait, we can tell them that we obey them and then they'll leave?
Yeah.
That just makes too much sense. I mean, hey, why not? We're just average people. We don't care. Raise
one flag a little bit higher than ours. I could do that.
Yeah.
Small tax, easy peasy.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that was a tactic that Genghis Khan had used, and it was quite effective, and hence why the Great Horde was able to spread from basically one of the largest empires ever during his and Kublai Khan's rule until they lost their entire fleet trying to go after an army going after Japan.
Yeah,
but that's history. So moving on. And also there's a little note of a nod to Moraine here, you know, where he agrees with Moraine's advice, you know, for Rand to take the oaths of fidelity to all of the nobles present. You know,
as much as it annoyed him,
yeah,
he sat back and allowed them all to come up and go, we want to kiss your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it immediately, I mean, that locks in a certain amount of followers. You're not going to have everybody. There's still going to be people working behind the scenes to undercut you, but it's going to lock in a big chunk.
Yeah. And of course, his whole thought is, I need to get this over with so I can go after Samael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still trying to get down with that.
Yeah. And even not only is he kind of against it, Luce Theron, though, agrees that the take the oaths.
Yeah. The fact that he's having these internal monologues with his past self, and they're answering back. No, don't get me wrong. I talk to myself all the time, and I answer myself back. If that's crazy, then it's crazy. But it's never in a different voice with a different train of thought with a history. It's typically my same voice, or at least how I think I sound, with the same train of thought, telling me, you know, have some confidence. You're right. Even when I'm absolutely wrong, you're still right. keep up the good work.
but didn't Rand go through all those flickers where it was like, I win again, lose Theron. I win again, lose Theron. I win again, lose Theron. Uh-huh. Wouldn't you know, a normal person like talk to the voice in their head and be like, bro, you're a fucking loser. Like, you've lost almost an infinite amount of times, like over and over again. Why would I listen to your advice?
This is the time where I decide not to listen. I keep full control of myself and we win. I think that's going to be the linchpin.
Right.
Rand is going to.
If all of Luz Theron's decisions ultimately led to him losing, he's a loser. Shouldn't you just do the opposite of everything that voice suggests in your head?
Yep. It's like, wait, you told me, what did you say to do again? All right. Okay. And now we're going to do the other thing.
I'm sure there's a lot of wisdom there, but like maybe, you know, towards the end, book 13, whatever, somewhere way like in the future here, Rand finally has that thought of like, look, bro, you make some good points, but I'm going to do things differently. So maybe part of him going crazy is the trying to fight.
Like committing himself to one woman. Like Luz is all about one woman.
Eliana.
You know, he's going to take on three.
Yeah.
So, you know, his plan now is to get ready to go attack Samuel. Do you think that that's going to happen soon? Do you think that's going to be his next move?
No. Nope.
You think that's where we're going? Oh, okay. Where do you think we're going?
At what point in these books have the characters gone, all right, this is where I want to go, and this is how I plan to get there? And when has that ever worked out? Never. Never.
That's my train of thought, too. I'm more interested in he's starting to realize and pay attention to Moraine's true objective. He's like, there is something in those wagons, because it was a thought, but it was a fleeting thought. There's something in those wagons that is more important than the mission that I'm currently on. So I need to know what that thing is. I need to know why that thing is so important and how that's going to impact the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I have a feeling that once he kind of heals and he's able to clear his thoughts and Moraine tries to make her move to leave, he's going to go, okay, well, let me accompany you. Let me take some people and go with you. And I, you know, I need to meet up with the Aes Sedai on my side anyway. You know, I think that's his next power move, is to try to pull in the big players that can help him in this battle. If he was smart, that would be what he'd be doing, is to take and, you know, enhance his army.
Okay. Yeah. I'm thinking towards the end of this book, he gets derailed in his mission of what he wants to do because of what Moraine has in that cart and who's driving the cart. Because Jordan keeps kind of every now and then touching back on that and even talking about how Rand, you know, knows that the cart driver, I always forget names, I'm horrible with them, but knows he's a dark friend, surprised he's still there. Like there's kind of a standing order to let him escape as long as he doesn't take anything with him, blah, blah, blah. And we know, like you said, what's in that cart, Rand may not know 100% what it is, but it's very precious to Moraine. And then we also know we have a chapter coming up called Choices. And it's probably going to be like the next couple chapters of Rand's perspective. He's got this full-fledged plan on how he's going to go take on Samuel. And then something wacky is going to happen with the cart or something like that. And he's got a choice. Like, okay, do I help Moraine with her mission or do I go do what I wanted to do? Because choices.
Yeah. There we go.
Or maybe he's like trip and fall like onto one of the things in the cart and it just zaps him into some other reality. I'm like, damn it. I'm fighting a different battle.
Interesting. Any other thoughts from we did talk about we skipped over most of the Gadir stuff, but you just mentioned it a little bit.
Yeah.
So. Did you I know we've asked before, do you have any speculation on what Moraine inside the wagons is looking for?
Well, I think we know that she's got a couple of the seals.
Okay.
I feel like that came up.
Does she have that thing that Matt went through?
I was going to say it. She's got to have the door frame.
The one that grants wishes. Like, and that could be a very easy way for the Amarylline seat to be able to channel again.
I was thinking the same.
If she could go into it and ask for it, like.
That would be a good way to reverse it.
Yeah.
And then she could channel without the restriction because she's no longer Aes Sedai.
That's true.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I feel like that's still the most powerful piece. But yeah, if there's seals, that's, I guess, important. Not like the eyes that I know what to do with the fucking seals or how to keep them from breaking. I mean, where they just get look at them, be like, I got one here, look at it. I don't know.
I also feel like it's about time that people start linking back up for a little bit. At least the ladies need to get back together and they need to, you know, come together with the Aes Sedai. I could almost see the wise ones joining them at some point.
Okay. Yeah. Just with the amount of books ahead of us, I don't have a lot of confidence of the band getting back together. Maybe onesies and twosies here and there. You know, Matt's probably by the end of this book going to go off and do his own thing.
I agree with that statement. I was just about to say the same thing.
Definitely has the potential to run into other folks while doing that, but
I think his little band is about to go on an adventure.
Yep. The greatest adventure.
Yeah. Anything else in these chapters?
We've only gotten through one of them, but no.
Yeah. All right. Chapter 47, The Price of a Ship. And our icon is the elephant. I didn't say the icon last time. What was it? I can't. It was just the Aes Sedai symbol, or like the old symbol with the yin yang looking thing. So it's the elephant for this one. It's a sederit.
Elephant.
Sederit. Sederit. What do they call them? Sederit. Sederit. Anyway, yeah. So let's get started here. It's a Nynaeve and Elaine point of view. We start with a Nynaeve. Nynaeve is in her wagon at the circus. And they've been there for, a couple of days?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doing their thing.
They're doing their thing. Waiting on ship news. So they can finally leave to go to Saladhar. And she's been having some nightmares the last few days about Mageddon and the Prophet and Brigitte shooting arrows at her and not missing. Which is terrifying. And of Elida being in charge in Saladhar.
I will say this is one time where I am appreciative of the italic not missing, because when I listened to it, I didn't catch the not missing part. Mm-hmm. In my mind, like, not missing meant she hit the board. But what she really meant was she was shooting her with arrows.
Right. Yeah.
And like it didn't dawn on me. And so I like looked at the book and read it. I was like, well, damn, that sucks. Like, she is having nightmares for real. And let me say this before we even get started. I said it before, but nobody else is listening. Ian, I'm pulling a you. This is a long chapter full of absolutely nothing.
And it all felt so predictable.
Yeah.
Nothing surprised me. I think I even said before, like, somehow Galad's going to end up going with them or something, which we don't get that out of this chapter, but I'm almost going to double down on that. Like,
oh, yeah.
He held some fight down the pier and then inevitably gets on the ship with him. Because and then they're definitely going to Caemlyn, right?
He's going to have to forsake his oath to the White, which will probably be the first time he ever breaks one.
Remember, there's a hierarchy of things in his mind, and his loyalty to Elaine in his mind was always above any other oath he might have given.
And the Queen, yeah, sure.
So, in his mind, he's not going to be breaking any vows, but yeah, some people might get pissed at him for it. So
the real issue is going to be, and I know we're leaving this chapter.
We're already at the end, Alan.
Until next time. Boat,
when he gets on the boat and then he realizes that they're not going home.
Yeah, but I think he'll get his way. Who's going to stop him?
Who's not? He's their two Aes Sedai, Uno.
You can't Tom stop me now.
Like, Tom's
so Lane's not going to use the can't power against him.
Stop me now, because I'm having a good time.
Anyway, back to where we were.
If Elaine won't use the power against him, Nynaeve can't, because she can't get angry at Galad because he's so dreamy.
He is. So, in truth, anxiety and lack of sleep were the only part of what made her mood vile this morning. The others were such minor things, but they were realities. A pebble in your shoe was small compared to having your head cut off. But if the pebble was there and the chopping block might never be. That's an interesting perspective. I have to say that this is probably the first time where I felt like Nynaeve was really losing it. Like her grip and her control, she realized she's completely gone. She even has thoughts in this chapter about, you know, I may still be the wisdom. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm skipping ahead, but the fact that she's having these reoccurring thoughts, she's really lost her confidence. She's lost her sense of self. Yeah. And, you know, making mountains out of molehills, or, you know, comparing a pebble to having your head chopped off. Mind you, a rock in your shoe is annoying after a while. you know, you deal with it and you keep it moving. Uncertain death is not something you can really deal with. So,
yeah, but if you're out on a trail in Virginia and you got a rock in your shoe, you don't go, well, I don't want to stop and get the rock because a mountain lion might attack me. And the mountain lion attack is not a 0% chance, but it's so infinitesimally small, you might as well take care of the pebble and exactly. not worry about that shit. That's really not going to be an issue. So I guess that's what she's battling with. Although yeah. one thing I'll add to your point is I still think all of that is very necessary. This Nynaeve coming to grips, like what she can't control and what she can, I think it's part of that process, hopefully, of her unlocking her abilities down the line. But it may get worse before it gets better. It probably will get worse before it gets better because she's still trying to hold on in some ways, you know? And how weird is this for her? Like, some very important shit needs to happen for them to get out of there. And she's gone two different routes to give her good chances to try and get this ship. But now she's just waiting. Like there's nothing else she can do but wait. And that's got to be very odd for Nynaeve.
Wait and wear pretty dresses that show off too much bosom. Uh-huh. And
yeah, I was going to ask you, what do you think about Valenluca like sliding the new threads to her? Like, hey.
If you have to do a thing, best you get used to it. I never thought I'd hear Nynaeve say, all right, I'm just going to kind of submit to what has to be done. Like, she's always been the headstrong, I'm gonna have my way. And then we have Valenluca going, I like you in this color today, and I like you in that color today, and well, you need three more dresses because clearly it's just not enough for you to have two. And you know, fabric probably costs a lot of money, and colored fabric costs more money, and he's throwing these gifts at her and he's really amping her up and treating her the way he would somebody that's special. So
I have some personal experience with when the internal struggles get so loud and difficult, like you don't have any capacity for anything external. So a lot of your answers to anything ever posed to you was like, sure, yeah, whatever, fine, just path of least resistance. Like, I don't want to argue with you, I can't. So it could be a little bit of that, or you know, maybe because she has all this self-doubt, it's a little reassuring to have somebody that's doting upon her to kind of help shore up that confidence that she's losing. I think she's really into him in any way, though.
Yeah. I mean, but speaking of arguing,
she's using him.
Arguing, Elaine and her just having at it like nonstop for the last few days, it says too. So they've.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's dealing with that.
I think she's taking that out on Elaine, or I don't know. It's just it's very tense situation.
If you're going to wear a dress in that fashion, Elaine, you should not sit so it's indecent. I mean, she's picking at little stuff. You're in the wagon, just the two of you. So what is she showing a little something off? Like, you're not interested in it? ? And
I don't know. I kept my legs crossed. I mean, that's the decent thing to do.
But if you need to air it out, because sometimes you just
that's when you get up and go for a fart walk. You just put a little bounce in your step and the dress kind of wafts it away. And
he wouldn't know. I mean, he wears dresses a lot, so
I wouldn't say a lot, but there's a ton
enough.
And it's funny because Egwene's definitely stepped fully into herself and she's gained a new confidence that she didn't have before. And I think it has a lot to do with her being able to do something naturally that is bringing her a lot of attention that isn't because of who she is. And it's not the use of the power. Like, she's tightroping, she's bringing a lot of people to the show. She's putting on a great show. Nobody knows who she is. Nobody knows that she has the power and she's not using it. So that right there just has given her a depth of confidence. And then she's at the point where she's like, this wagon is confining. She's feeling constrained by being in a space with Nynaeve, as to where at one point she didn't really want to leave the others.
Yeah.
So kind of seeing some shifts in the characters a little bit.
What do you think about Egwene showing up in both their dreams?
Kudos to her, because she's definitely been working on trying to enter people's dreams without.
Yeah, this is in their dreams, not Teleron Riyadh, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then B, the span of space that she had to travel, and time, if you want to put it that way, to get there.
Yeah. So, but they realized they've both been having the same dream. So is this Teleron Riyadh?
Could be Megiddian fucking with him.
Okay.
No, it was too specific, I think.
It's updating Rain on his victory in Carrion. It's, I mean, that's still around Riyadh.
Is it?
Well, I mean, like, for like Egwene to come and tell them about events that are happening outside their knowledge. That's not like, I guess, like the chance of both having prophetic dreams. I mean, I don't know. I'll let you guys just do your own theories. Go ahead.
Well, so, I mean, I guess you can see others' dreams when you're in Talon Riyadh, but.
I mean, you can go into people's dreams. That's a good point, but that's really dangerous. They've talked about that before.
Yeah.
That was my question. I thought that's what Egwene was doing. No.
I thought she was stepping out of her dream. Well, I guess that is
how. Wait. So if not, then that means without the ring, both of these ladies are able to go into Teleron Riyadh. So is this something they developed?
No, they're not in it. She's in it and she's seeing their dreams.
No, so if they're not going into Teleron Riyadh, then Egwene is going into their dreams.
Exactly. That's how I understood it, at least.
That's why I was assuming Egwene was going into their dreams, but I didn't consider the fact that they could be slipping into Teleron Riyadh without the ring.
Yeah, but that would imply that they're dream walkers as well, like the others. And they could be. I mean, it's just an expansion.
Even Channelers that aren't natural healers can still heal a little bit. That's so, like, true. It's possible with certain training, you can learn a little bit of everything, maybe. But well, I guess I'd have to reread that passage. I didn't really focus on that question you asked there, Alan. Like, how was that interaction taking place?
Well, how dangerous is that then? Because then Morgadian could literally attack them while they sleep in their dreams because they're allowing their dreams to slip into a space that shouldn't be.
Hmm. Yeah, true. If they are able to get Teleron Riyadh without the ring and not intentionally, they need to start paying better attention to what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, so they need to learn how to ward their dreams. Mm-hmm. Is that even possible?
Yeah,
Moraine did it.
Yeah, so they need to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
We're slipping into dangerous territory now.
Yeah, and at this point, Elaine convinces Nynaeve that they should use the ring to go and try to attempt to meet with Egwene again. But Nynaeve is terrified that she might encounter Mageddon if she does that.
True.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is what it is. I think one thing we have to go back to the whole conversation about the Seanchan refugees and Seanchan in general. We realize that this conversation is coming up more and more. So not in this book, but in the next book, I think they're going to have a prevalent place.
Okay.
So that's.
And those are going to be heavy Matt chapters. I mean, Matt's going to get involved with them.
This might be a Matt book. It might be a Matt and Perrin book. Yeah. We haven't seen Perrin in a minute.
Instead of Seanchan, it's going to be Matt Chan. They're going to rename it.
I will give this spoiler. Perrin will be in the next book, guys. Okay.
Yeah. Like,
if not still in this book. If not still in this chapter, book. Anyway, so
you know what it's going to be at the very end of the book. The last paragraph is going to be like some internal monologue of a parent perspective for like a paragraph. That's going to be it.
Yeah, exactly. And the honeymoon was fantastic. The end.
Yeah. More to come in the next book. No.
How horrible would it be to get to that thought and then that book not be out yet? Like, I feel for all of you people that read this book back in the 90s or whenever it came out, like, it was bad enough having to wait on the next Harry Potter book, but at least they kind of finalized those a little bit. But these books get left on the biggest cliffhangers ever. And after meeting you all and like feeling your energy, I don't know how y'all survived an entire year or whatever it took for him to get the next book out. I would be
luckily the only book I had to wait on was the last one, because when I picked up the series, they were the only last book was the last one that was still not written yet.
Yeah,
so it's the only one I had to wait on. But it was like pretty much once I got done with the series, it was out within a couple months, so it wasn't that bad. At this point, Birgitta, she enters the wagon without knocking. And
she bull rushes into the wagon and boom, instant argument between Nynaeve. Yep. At least Nynaeve has finally given up on trying to be her slave.
That's good.
She no longer feels guilty about bringing her into this world.
Well, she's not acting like that little sick puppy dog at her ankles, like,
you know, did we talk about still feel this, guilty, Ian? But how did she manifest the physical body?
Who? Brigitte?
Brigitte. This is where I have to give you your props on the whole time continuum and really stepping into and out of different times.
Yeah.
Like times and maybe the multiverse type theory. Yeah. Or yeah. The Aiel in the end of the last chapter, who was it, Avienda? Somebody was talking about how, like, maybe the Aiel will disappear when he leaves this world and, like, they're just part of mm-hmm. Rand's dream or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
So is the world we're in now just some kind of dream world or I don't know, man.
Yeah. Maybe they shifted. What's it called when people in that have the multiverse, like conscious shifting, like when you, it's like one of the explanations that people give, like conspiracy theories, and why there's the Mandela effect is because of conscious shifts, like that we actually shift between bodies in different parallel universes, and our memories are not wrong.
It's very similar, like 99.99% similar, but then there are certain things that are just
off. Yeah. It's one of the conspiracy theories around it. Then also they've done studies on that and how horrible the even actual memory is, and that's usually why.
I know mine's bad, so I won't argue that.
Like you can they've done it before for like crime studies, like where they show like a crime scene where a guy was wearing a blue shirt and then they say certain things inside the interview to suggest like a green shirt or whatever, but like very subtly. And then they ask you like a week later, like what color shirt the guy wearing, and you got to see the whole video. He's like, oh, he's wearing a green shirt, definitely, 100%. Like, like no, it was a blue shirt. Like, and you are like, will die on the, you know, to your grave saying it was a different color shirt. Like, there's the human memory is very easy to like memories are just in general not great. So they tend to change over time to fit whatever you want them to
your ego needs from it.
They've done studies about it, and it's one of those things where it just happens. Humans are pretty bad about that.
Or we're genius because we want to make ourselves feel great all the time, so exactly. We just turn the bad stuff into good things and the good things into even greater moments.
Everybody wants to be the hero of their own story.
Yeah. As I quote the Matrix, ignorance is bliss. So my memory's gonna be racing. I'm gonna put back into the sign me up. where were we? So Brigitte and Brigitte takes Elaine out to stop the quarreling between the two of them, and Brigitte turns to Elaine and tells Elaine and Nynaeve that Tom and Julian are back in Samara. Kind of ends that conversation. So
yeah, let's shift to Tom and Julian. Starts getting a little more exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Callan knew every merchant's guard by his first name, and she certainly had no secrets from any of them. Brigitte smile tightened. And I knew a woman like you once. Mathena, looked down on every man, too, and even had a poor fellow executed for coming on her by accident.
Giggity.
While she swam naked, which...
Giggity?
How do you accidentally do that? Anyway, she had never been kissed until Zaharis stole one from her. You thought she had discovered men for the first time. She became so besotten, Zaharis had to go live on a mountain to escape her. Watch out for the first man to kiss you. One has to come along sooner or later. That was a saucy moment. I think this is the first time we're having a real conversation about like serious nudity and accidental coming in the whole Jordan's book so far. So I didn't want to skip over that part. And now we can go to Tom and Julian showing up looking like they got their backsides handed to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they had sworn to obey them and were not given permission to go, but they went. So,
hey, it's a gray area. We didn't ask you permission to go, and you didn't tell us we couldn't go. So,
look, Nynaeve went off by herself. So, come on. And technically, they're doing their jobs. I mean, for them to be able to protect them, they got to know what's going on. So, they're doing yeah. what they know how to do. They're using the connections they know how to find. And
yeah, both of them are looking kind of rough though. Then,
well, I don't think it was necessarily their individual faults. All hell is breaking loose. Like it's riots. It's going crazy. So mm-hmm. they definitely got caught up in it.
Yeah.
Can I tell you, even though we figure this out literally in a few paragraphs, in my mind, I was like, this has something to do with the ship.
I think the chapter title might have.
Mm-hmm.
That may have sparked that thought into my mind. Yeah. May have peppered it a little bit.
They started it pretty much.
Even if that's where it all started. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't get there until Galad showed up and they started talking.
I mean, when you have like 1,000 pounds of gunpowder here and you got a boy with a match standing 2 feet from it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all it takes is one moment of curiosity and.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Boom. Yeah. That's kind of, I mean, that's a horrible picture, but that was exactly where my mind went. Was they were just looking for a reason to fight and it was handed to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yep.
And Samara, she's got two factions that don't like each other going after the next available ship.
Yeah.
Samara's right now is like a school of silver pike around a chunk of bloody meat. There are mobs in the street everywhere.
Yeah. They're going nuts. Or if you can't picture that, you know, think about all the things we've been taught about piranhas. You know, when they go in their feeding frenzy, just going nuts.
Yep. Exactly. So Uno comes running in. It's like, I found the ship, but there's rides everywhere. So,
and White Cloaks have the docks.
And the White Cloaks have the docks, and the Prophet's ready to burn the whole city to the ground to kill all the White Cloaks. And yeah, things are good, kind of a little hairy out there.
All right, cool. You found a ship. Let's go. He's like, oh, you can't get there from here.
And then Brigitte's like, and by the way, everything looks to be on fire. There's like smoke rising from the city. Like all the things that could go wrong have gone wrong. Like Murphy's Law has come into effect and, you know, shit's literally being burned.
Keep living life. You will stop being surprised by shit like that. I'm surrounded by Murphy's Law. I expect it at this point. If it could go wrong, it will go wrong.
Yeah.
You just learn to embrace it.
Yeah.
A lot less stress that way.
And in the midst of all this, we still see Nynaeve grasping for some type of control and to show that she's in charge of the situation. And she's having this back and forth battle with Egwene and really with herself, by herself.
Yeah. And Elaine's still trying to put a cold compress on Tom. Be like, oh, Tom, you're too old to be doing this. Come on, Tom.
Come on.
Yeah.
Put that cold compress on your forehead. Come on, Marshall Dalen. You'd be all right.
This is definitely solidifying this idea that Tom is really her father. Like I because it's making it so obvious, I feel like that's the wrong thought.
Either he is her father or he's gonna be her daddy.
She could call him daddy one way or another.
I still have my dream of the Pegasus, of the unicorn, you know, coming in and swooping up Moraine and, you know, Tom, the white, being the savior of the day. But,
well, remember, something happened for Merghaez to boot Tom out and be pissed at him.
This is true.
Who'd he knock the boots with?
Well, he cheated. I like that. So are we implying that he knocked the boots with Moraine early on?
I don't know, man.
That would be hairy because that.
How would Elaine feel about that if she finds that out?
There was like a feel of familiarity in the very first book between the two of them that has been glanced.
Him Master Bard initially? And he was like, "Oh no, but I'm just a Lily Gleeman."
Yes,
that's true. She knew who he was.
Easter eggs. Now it would be crazy going back to reality if that ended up being a real thing. Like, I definitely just, anyway, sure. That would be crazy.
Sure. I don't think there's unicorns in all the time.
Rhinoceroses.
Say that yet. I mean, we've got elephants and everything else.
Oh, good point. There could be rhinoceroses. Yeah. Or maybe it's a narwhal.
Yeah.
It's a narwhal. Still have how many books to go?
Unicorns. Bye, Tom.
Hope you find your dad. I still feel like real dragons are going to come up at some point in time.
Yeah.
Probably not, but.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
One can hope.
Yeah.
So, okay, who walks in next?
So
more like strolls up.
You're talking about Uno?
No, we're past the Uno thing. Yeah.
Oh, Galad.
We know.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Bada-bing. Strolls in.
Yeah, comes on in, says, hey, got shit for you.
All the women are peering at him. They're all drooling a little bit. You know, the wives are looking over the shoulders of their husbands as they embrace them in a hug.
It's Fabio coming in, waving his hair in the wind. Yeah, Fabio.
Gets hit by a goose.
Gets hit by a goose, yeah.
Did you hear that they're closing Da Vinci's cradle?
Are you serious?
Aren't they really?
I'm dead serious. I just got a message from Busch Gardens concierge. Sorry, guys, we're on a tangent now. They're closing Da Vinci's cradle after 20 years.
As of right now, or we get it for this season?
No, as of now, like, I guess it's at its end.
It probably broke, and they're like, we ain't paying to fix that crap.
Yeah.
That is the best ride at Busch Gardens.
It's pretty sweet. Yeah.
It's a fun one.
Da Vinci's cradle and battering ram. It's one
of three I can still fit on because of my shoulders. Yeah. So it is the best ride.
Well, I mean, you're talking about Da Vinci's cradle, not Apollo's chariot, right?
Yeah, Da Vinci's cradle.
Okay.
I can't get on Apollo's chariot because my hips are too wide for the seat.
Okay.
Like, I'm not a squishy fat. I'm a solid fat.
Wait, even fat. The big seats, don't they have one row where they have like when extra I big seats you, in the
I
middle?
I have women's hips.
No, I mean, I saw you reclining in chairs that were not made to recline at Joy-Con.
I got women's hips. I have tried my hardest to push into these chairs. And I mean, when I tell you, I have got even a single click.
Not one click.
The red light was still on.
Oh, wait. Someone just posted a picture that is Galad. It's Zoolander doing Blue Steel.
Yeah. There it is. He just walks in, looks to his left, turns left, and everybody goes, ah.
And the orb comes out around him, and it just the sea parts. And
yeah. So this is where Nynaeve finds out her plan to, well, let's double tap this and have two people going after a ship. Well, it worked. There's a ship. Might have backfired a little bit because now there's chaos and everyone's trying to kill each other. And like you said, that powder keg is exploded.
Yeah.
And there's a chain reaction.
And Galad, and then he was upset at Galad for not realizing the consequences of his actions, but Galad doesn't understand why not use his say. He's like, I got the ship. What do you mean?
He's like I did exactly why what I told you I was gonna
doesn't
do.
Take the consideration her actions. Let's just really think about who the problem has been for a minute. Nynaeve, I need her to get it together. I need her just to chill out. I have a guy.
Yeah.
Has these magical gummies that probably make matters worse for her in her own head.
Then they could be astronauts and fly away in a spaceship. They don't even need.
Yeah, but then things get even more complicated because then good old Val and Luke comes in and he's like, guys, things are getting out of control. We're leaving within the hour. Pack your shit up. The circus is leaving. And Naive's like, yeah, we're not going with you. We're done here. He's like, but I want to marry you.
Well, it was more like, come with me. And he snatches her up by the arm. And she's like, oh, don't do this. And everybody else is like, just go on. We all know that you really like him, but you don't want to be with him. We know that the man that you want to be with doesn't want anything to do with you. What is it about? And I'm like, this is going to sound really sexist, but a misogynist, whatever word you want to use. What is it about women going with the man that doesn't want them? There have been a couple of
Land wants Nynaeve.
But can't have. Like the man she can't have.
He claims it. Come on now. You're like, let's just be real. If you really wanted it, you would take it. Like, I don't care what you say out your mouth. If you want it, you're going to take it. And she has been flat out told, like, it's just not going to happen. Like, you're grasping at straws. Maybe there's a small chance that it could occur, but it's more than likely not going to happen. And she still goes after him. And then here's a man who clearly will do anything for her, has done a lot for her, and then even makes a statement like, do you think I'm stupid? I know you're running away from something. Like, dude, let's just like,
I was getting annoyed by him and have been pretty much ever since we met him. But then I start thinking, I'm like, okay, you know, I claim, even though Jordan doesn't, that there's some Tiberiness with some of our female characters. Nynaeve's certainly one of them. And the pattern is what the pattern is. So, like, okay, how is this Val and Luca dude, annoying as he is, how is he going to come into play? Like, okay, well, she's definitely going to try and leave. I don't see that she's going to fall in love with this guy. That'd be totally weird if that happened. But he could be useful later on, and his loyalty to her and desire to want to help her could come into play. It could come into play with helping them get down the pier to the ship. So maybe he does play some big role here in helping them coming up. But on the romantic side of things, I don't see that happening.
Agreed. But at the same time, I like his tenacity. So, like, again,
I mean, got to shoot your shot.
Yeah, he shot his shot. Like, he's like, I can get a hit
without swinging the bat. You gotta.
I know you're not good for me, pretty much. I know you're running from something, but we're better to be than with us. Like, I can definitely help protect you and take care of you, and we can make this work. And so, you know, again, I'm just trying to him. He's trying his hardest. And at the end of the day, it's just like, she won't stay with him. Well, I mean, she's got other things to do. She definitely, honestly, I don't feel like she does.
Yeah, but if he overheard Galad get scolded for doing exactly what Nynaeve asked him to do, like, that's a red flag. That's a toxic woman right there.
True.
I'll tell you what, that's on my short list of things that I was looking out for. If ever, like, I do exactly what it is you were asking me to do, and then you get pissed at me for it, I'm gonna just not talk to you again. Because if you can't communicate effectively and understand what you're freaking saying, that's on you, not on me. If you're upset with the result, you need to look at yourself, not me. Anyways, yeah. I don't think Nynaeve's the one to get with right now. Anyway, she's got some shit she's got to deal with. She ain't ready for no man. She ain't even ready for herself.
Yeah. Anything else therapy, about this? Nynaeve. Anything about this before we move to Elaine's point of view? Because this is kind of the end where Nynaeve declines the offer. And that's kind of the end of it.
I like this little brief unity with Galad and Uno and Uno's men. Galad, like, well, you're going to need more than just those couple of guys. And Uno's like, I got a couple more. We can handle our own.
Well, so I mean, the fact
everybody's that, kind of on the same team to get him to the ship.
I was going to say, like, that they're between the two of them, they should be able to convince each side to be like, hey, we're good. Like, these are. Like, let's get them through.
I'd like to see them, like, ride on Valen Lucca's elephants or something down the pier. Or, like, the pier gets cleared by the zoo animals, and then, like, somehow they make it to the ship. Okay. I think it would be cool to, like, work that in there.
What was that old movie with the doctor and the animal?
Oh, yeah. Dr. Doolittle?
Dr. Doolittle. Oh. Dr. Doolittle style,
for yeah. sure.
All right. Anything else?
I mean, we get to the scene where we'll move forward. I'll let you go ahead.
We get to Elaine's point of view, or Elaine tries to persuade, is it Serenade?
Yeah.
The handler to
Did
come
she
with
really
them.
Try to persuade her though. That was the worst persuasion conversation I've ever heard. More or less, she just tried to tell her,
I'm a queen.
For girls, it's the worst.
It's like, you need me. You need to come with me right now. I'm a queen. And this woman's like, I can handle my own. I know what safety looks like. And traveling with Valen has been the best thing for me and the animals. And you're not thinking about my animals. You know, I hate to say this, but I will. My sister, my younger sister, she is quite the gypsy. She, like, will couch surf. Or, like, she refuses to maintain a job longer than, like, 2 weeks. She'll make just enough money to kind of, like, make scoop by. And it's... A point of contingency between us.
That was supposed to be my life, by the way. So I like your sister.
That is my brother-in-law, like, to a T. Yeah. Like, he'll make like $1,000, like, save up, like, it's at the bank account after paying bills, and then, like, quit his job and then go to Mexico for like a while, and then come back and be like, all right, I'm out of money, need a job again, and then quit and go somewhere else.
Yeah, I would love to do that,
but
alas.
Like, the reason why she's been gypsying the last few months, because she's my older sister's offered, my mother has even offered, which that's relationship in and of itself. She's got two dogs and she won't give her dogs up. Oh. She'd rather, like, sleep out of the car. And
I'll tell you what, I've had some relationships with some longtime homeless folks that keep an animal, and they do a better job taking care of their dog than people that just ignore their animals all day long.
And she loves her animals. Yeah. It's very evident.
It's possible she's, I don't know the situation. she could still be taking care of them, but
She is. She does a great job. Like the dogs are healthy. They're happy. She's healthy. She's happy. Like you wouldn't think she's a couch surfer because you shouldn't be, you know, living. She doesn't smell bad.
Is that what you're saying? She doesn't smell bad, so you wouldn't.
No, she doesn't smell bad. Nothing like that.
She's doing all right then.
She's got a lot of jiggle on her. Like she's fed.
Oh my. What's up? She's not listening. You're gonna get a phone call. I can't believe you said
she doesn't. She hasn't read a book since middle school.
Well, so earlier you said like this was the lamest attempt to convince somebody to come with you, and I added for women because I don't know how many times with my guy friends it'd be a totally stupid random idea, and they're like, "Hey, Ian, do you want to go do blank?" And I just go, "Yeah,
okay." Hey. Ian, you want to catch a possum?
No reasons given. Like, maybe there's a question like, my car or your car? Like, how are we getting there? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was an awkward proposition.
We were talking about on the way to JordanCon, like, in the car, about, like stupid stuff. Like, yeah, when we were younger, we didn't do stupid stuff. We started thinking about, like, yeah, we did.
We did a lot of stupid stuff. Oh no, we started talking about people riding around on motorcycles without helmets. I wouldn't do that, blah blah blah, like just horrible risk. Why would you do that? I was like, I've done some stupid stuff, but nothing like that. And then it got quiet for a second, and then we started listing all the dumb shit we should have died from, and we're like, okay, maybe I have done some dumb stuff. Maybe I shouldn't be so judgy.
I never would have done something like that. Yes, actually, I have done a lot of dumb stuff. Actually, dumber, a lot dumber.
I think we killed an hour or two just listing all the dumb shit. Oh man,
that we should be dead from. Oh yeah,
that's the book you guys have to write. Like,
I don't even talk about like the army dumb shit I've done. Like, eventually, Alan and I run out of stories. I'll start getting into my stories when I was living in single in the barracks in Germany. Let me tell you, we did some dumb shit, and it was a lot of fun. But yeah, we could totally write a book.
Your memoir after you retired. You no longer have all the constraints.
It'd probably only be funny to me. Well, yeah, I need to be done with my security clearance too, because
I need that right now. That's the moneymaker.
Yeah, right. right. But yeah, so why do you have a thought other than it was weird? Because like I didn't understand why part of trying to convince her was I'm the daughter heir to blah blah blah. Like what?
It's probably worked previously in her life. Using that line, and that's probably wise, because usually she's used to being an and/or she's on the daughter heir, and be like, okay, what do you want me to do? Like, and
you think, I don't know.
Well, she's got a serving woman.
She's sheltered.
Who?
That's true. Yeah, it could
have been like the world to, like, you come to me and I'll protect you. Like she's told her she'd protect her.
You got to know your audience. Like this is somebody that is just hopping around with a traveling circus, menagerie. Right? Yeah, yeah, like. You're going to win her over being like, by the way, come do this noble shit with me. Mm-hmm. It clearly didn't. Well, anyways, I don't know. You're right. It felt weird and I have no explanation for it.
I mean, if she had said, hey, I got to wait for your elephants to get where they need to be, it would have been a different story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe.
What I love more, the more important part of this is Brigitte sitting back like, yeah, this shit's not going to go well, but I'm going to watch this.
And eventually she speaks up. She's like, he ain't no queen or no princess. Like, shut up.
She's like, I don't know what your thoughts were there. Just inform me as to where you were going with all this. Like, what was your thought process?
Hey, like what we're doing right now. Like, why any of that? None of that. Yeah.
She's like, tell me why this made sense in your mind. She's like, I'm your warder, right? Like you get on me because
no, that's right.
Protect nothing you. But a because I mean, so Egwene reaches out
tell
and grabs
me why.
The same woman who literally beat Nynaeve to a pulp, you know, weeks earlier without even touching her, really. She just flip back and forth, you know, tossed around. Turned over a knee, lifted the skirt, gave her a spanking.
Yeah.
Like, and then you're going to go grabbing her and try to force her to do what you want. First off, women have choices.
Choices.
She's done that. And second, like, again, she's like, as your warder, I know what I need to
come out right and protect you. And then I know when you need to learn a lesson so that I don't have to protect you. So what lesson did we learn?
Right. Yeah. Let's make this a teaching learning moment.
It's one of our things as a teacher.
Now watch her like inevitably end up going with them or something, but whatever.
They're going to run back into each other.
Yeah.
Just like
I still think it'd be cool if the animals clear the pier.
It's going to be a really weird twist when Nynaeve does end up with Luca.
Ew.
I just, as much as I want her and Lan to be a thing, I can see her and Luca, you know, actually being a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe if he does swoop in and save them and she gives him the time of day and realizes he's packing something worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, Lan is just like, I'm too committed to my job and I will die for this. And, you know.
Well, yeah. In about 4 books, he's going to reassert himself in his former kingdom because the blight's going to keep receding and, you know, he's going to have to take over.
Marry her.
Right. He's going to be too busy.
Yeah.
Something like that. What are we talking about, Alan? Where are we at?
Pretty much the end. Yeah. She just screams, gets angry, screams at Rita, and then like stomps off like all huffy. And that's how we end this chapter.
Porter, don't talk to me like that in front of my friends.
Why didn't you protect me? You're supposed to be my warder. And she was like, you put yourself in that situation. That has been my answer a number of times. So my ex-fiance, Christine,
you need to learn from
about a very long time, used to get so upset with me when there'd be like a family battle and I would sit back and just be quiet. And then she'd go, you're my partner. You're supposed to be on my side. And I look at her and go, but you were wrong.
Yeah, so the best thing I could do is be quiet at that point.
At least I didn't give my actual opinion, because when I give my opinion, you really get upset. So at least this moment, I didn't say anything, because normally when I speak and I give my opinion, then it's like, even he agrees. And then the conversation shut down. Like at that point, you're being a spoiled brat, which she was quite often. So I learned to just be quiet. I only had that one choice. Especially when it comes to family.
Trapped.
Trapped. There you go.
If we were out in public and it was like somebody we knew or somebody we really didn't know, then even when she was wrong, I'd still like be there and I would try to rationalize it. And typically I could rationalize enough to win or at least get to a stalemate. But when it comes to family, like I'm not going to pick you over our family. If you're wrong and we're in a safe space, then you're wrong.
Yeah,
that's where you can learn safe lessons. She just didn't like that. So I had a little bit of PTSD moment when I was listening to this, because I was like, I was her warder and I didn't protect her because she needed to learn a lesson.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. That's how we end. Anything we missed?
Nope.
Awesome. Well, favorite character then, guys.
I'm going to pick Galad, and it's kind of because I feel bad for him, because I hate that situation of, hey, I'm here and I got that very difficult thing to acquire that you wanted me to acquire. And I did the thing that you asked me to do. And it was with much difficulty, but I did it. And then Nynaeve was like, the fuck you thinking, bro? Like, come on.
The files are in the computer.
They're in the computer. Yeah, so... felt bad for Glad a little bit there. Like, he's trying to help out and just got his pee-pee slapped.
Toxic femininity.
Yeah.
That's what that was.
Well, that's anybody who hasn't dealt with that internal conflict, those issues she's having, and she's lazily taking it out on other people.
Agreed.
And so you could take the she out of that statement. Any, like,
deflecting
people that act that way just frustrates me.
Yes, I agree. It's very triggering. There are so many good moments in these two chapters. I like Brigitte and her response to I am your warder and this is why I let that happen. I also like Luca for being what I envision a man. Yeah, he's not only that, like he knew he was putting his whole business in harm's way.
He put it on the line.
He's not even worried about the 100 gold. He's like, baby, I ain't worried about that money.
He put it all on the line, knowing that she was running from something serious, knowing that she was never a handmaid. Like,
yeah, look, you're out of my league. Love. but yeah. I'm gonna do what I can for you. Let's mm-hmm. do this. Oh, and what about last chapter? Who was the guy that ended up riding with Rand? They talked about him briefly, like his whole family got killed, and he's like, well, I'm gonna just follow the dragon. And at some point, I'm gonna get my revenge on whoever killed my family.
Yeah.
I think they named him by name, but yeah, that guy gets a strong honorable mention because mm-hmm. it was a brief blip, and I was like, all right.
Then we have Asmodian kind of turning the leaf. So if I have to pick a character, which is what you're asking me to do.
It is tough.
It is tough because
that's why I threw a curveball on this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna give it to
Tom Manas.
No one asked you, Alan.
Because I've been in his position. Like, I've shot my shot a couple times at a particular person who, as much as she loved me and as much as we did together and as much fun as we had together and as great of a couple as we were, we never actually became a couple because she's like, it just won't work beyond the great friendship that we have. Mm-hmm. Like, literally the only thing we didn't have was, like, physical intercourse. You know, everything else we had together. And it was like, no, it's just not going to work. I was like, okay, cool. But I feel him.
Yeah. Maybe it'll work out for him in the long run.
Maybe.
He's going to find somebody better. That's what I did.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So next time on the Wheel of Reads, we'll be doing two chapters again, 48 and 49. And that would be Leave Takings and To Bo Anda, Anda, on To Bo Anda, Anda, Bo Anda, Bo Anda. I don't know if that's pronounced right, but that's how I'm saying it.
There'll be three different pronunciations when we come back next Tuesday. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
yep. But Leave Takings, we've had that chapter before.
Yeah, somebody's going on an adventure. The other one, I'm assuming the Tinkers are coming back around. Maybe this is our parent chapter.
Oh yeah, okay. Right.
I'm just joking. Like I need to say that there's gonna be a parent chapter every other chapter, just because I miss Perrin.
Okay.
I'm thinking whether it's our girls and Tom and Julian, or whether it's Rand in that group. This is where somebody gets diverted from their plan.
Yeah,
it was different. Or maybe our original wolf brother comes back into play for some reason. We haven't seen Elias in forever.
I've given up on Perrin in this book.
We also have the missing wolf brother.
Maybe they got
a wolf brother club out in the woods somewhere. Like, nah, I'm making
the guy from that chapter, gnome or whatever. Yeah. No,
the crazy one.
The crazy one.
We got a little.
You think he's coming back in these books?
Yeah, he's definitely coming back.
He's the comic relief that hyena from The Lion King that was just a little bit messed up in the head. Not quite there.
Mufasa. What did you say?
That's the best part of that whole movie. It made worth watching it every hour on the hour.
Yeah. And they cut it out from the Lion
King. That pissed me off so much. I'm just not going to lie to you. Won't go there. I have not rewatched that, and I will not rewatch that. Mm-hmm. Between that and the pig song,
cost
it out of line for a piece of swine. All you gotta do is get in line. All right, get us out of here, Alan.
All right, so how we can be found is thewhatreads.com. That will direct you to thegreatblight.com. That Nablus has so kindly built me a website, so I don't have to build a website for thewheelofreads.com. And I'll have links there to all of our good stuff, like our Discord and our Patreon and our merch. Just be sure to click on the link within the site to our merch and not the merch on the top, because that'll take you to the Great Blights merch, which is not our merch, but still has cool stuff. So that's fine if you want to buy their stuff. I'm not stopping you. In fact, please, but also, look at ours.
I will tell you, by the way, huge shout out for that stuff getting to our door 2 days mm-hmm. before we had
it looked good on you too.
I felt,
yeah,
thank you. I appreciate it. Like, I felt
slim and I felt comfortable and it was so soft. And
they do have really nice shirts. They do. I mean, they're really quality shirts. I have one shirt. It's not one of ours, but it's still a shirt made by them, and it's quality.
And I ordered Chanel, like it's unisex. So I ordered her what I thought was the right size and it looked good on her. And she loves the shirt. So like, I'm not saying it because I want people to go buy it because we get anything from it, though we might. I'm saying it because I bought the shirts and now they're going to become part of my daily wear.
Yeah.
Normally,
you're working them into the rotation.
Yeah, they're going to the rotation. Okay. Like I have
nice. That's a big deal on Guy World.
That suck, but I wear them when I go to the school because it's my alma mater.
Right.
But
it ain't a rotation shirt.
Yeah, these are going into rotation. Like I will work out in them and I will wear them on the weekends.
Oh,
and
nice.
People will talk to us about
maybe
it.
Maybe like, oh, I listen to that podcast. Like, well, I'm in that podcast, bitch. Yeah.
This is me. You see the big guy right here? That's all of me.
Yeah. But yeah, so buy our merch, buy our support us on Patreon, join Discord. If you want to find us on our social medias, we're everywhere. Just Google us or just go to any social media platform, type in the Will Reads, you'll find us.
Chanel loves to tell people that somebody created a wiki page about us, which I think is absolutely crazy. I kind of want to know what's on it, but
I haven't looked.
I gotta go look. That's fantastic.
Is there a Wikipedia page for us?
Yes, that's what she said. I haven't
gotten liked. That's crazy. All right, cool. So you can find us on Wikipedia, maybe. I haven't confirmed that.
Very cool.
But and that's all I got for this week.
Until next time.
Peace.
Okay, bye.
I hope you enjoyed the show, and thank you for listening to The Wheel Reads. See y'all next time.